Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, February 11th, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho House saves Blaine Amendment to state constitution after attempt to repeal the language preventing the use of taxpayer money for religious indoctrination. New lawsuit would require U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to publish wolf recovery plan. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studio in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Center for Biological Diversity filed a lawsuit in federal court yesterday to force the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to create a recovery plan for wolves, which are listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act in 44 states. The federal agency decided last year not to release a wolf recovery plan, saying the species does not warrant federal protection. There have been efforts in Congress in the last year to delist wolves nationwide via legislation. The federal government did take wolves off the endangered species list more than a decade ago in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, plus eastern Washington and eastern Oregon. State wildlife agencies are managing wolves in those areas, with Idaho and Montana particularly eager to allow widespread hunting of wolves. Wolves are also listed as threatened in Minnesota. Under the first Trump administration, the Fish and Wildlife Service attempted to delist wolves outside of the Northern Rockies, but a federal judge in California stopped that effort in 2022. Center for Biological Diversity Senior Attorney and Carnivore Conservation Program Director Colette Adkins wrote in a statement, "Instead of trying to illegally strip wolves of protections once again, the Fish and Wildlife Service must finally follow the law and develop a plan to achieve nationwide wolf recovery. Wolves are so important to America's biodiversity, and they deserve a plan that guides conservation in places where they're struggling, like the West Coast and Southern Rocky Mountains. I'm frustrated we have to go to court yet again to force the Trump administration to do its job and comply with the Endangered Species Act. If federal officials would let this landmark law truly work for wolves, we could see these amazing animals start to recover in places they once roamed." The Center for Biological Diversity maintains a recovery plan for wolves, quote, "should describe actions needed to achieve full recovery of protected species." The Los Angeles Times reported over the weekend wildlife managers have documented a wolf in Los Angeles County for the first time in over a century. A bill before the Washington Senate would add two tribal representatives to the six-member State Natural Resources Board, meaning tribes will have a seat at the table when the board makes decisions about logging and other management on millions of acres of public lands in the state. The Washington State Standard reports the Natural Resources Department requested the legislation, and Democratic Senator Claudia Kaufman of Seattle, the first Native American woman ever to serve in the Washington Senate, sponsored the bill. If passed, the bill would expand the Natural Resources Board to 8 members, with one eligible tribal member from each side of the Cascades. To be eligible, tribal members must hold an elected position in a federally recognized tribe in Washington. The board approves timber sales, manages conservation land, establishes sustainable forest harvest levels, and oversees the sale and exchange of state trust lands. The Washington House yesterday passed a bill which would make it more difficult to challenge a voter's registration. There have been increasing efforts by Republican operatives around the nation to knock residents off voter rolls. House Bill 1916 passed on a party-line vote 58-28 and now heads to the Senate. According to the Washington State Standard, Democratic Representative Beth Doglio of Olympia said, even a baseless challenge can make a voter think twice before going to the polls. After the 2020 election, Trump began to lie and claim the election was stolen from him by Biden, a lie that led to the January 6th, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol that left 8 people dead, including 5 police who defended the Capitol. Although Trump often claims that thousands of non-citizen immigrants are voting, there is little evidence of any of that. Investigative journalist Greg Pallast says Trump's operatives have been trying to purge voter rolls as a way to make sure the far right stays in control. He says he has proved that Jim Crow tactics purging voter rolls cost Vice President Harris 3.56 million votes, 4 states, and the presidency in 2024. Pallast wrote last year, 2025 is here, and the struggle for democracy has never been more urgent. The last election is a story of a White House hijacked by voter suppression, powered by the actions of vigilantes. He says in his movie, Vigilantes Incorporated, narrated by Rosario Dawson and introduced by Martin Sheen, quote, I uncover the brutal mechanics of voter suppression that helped Trump seize power, not by winning votes, but by erasing them. Pallast quotes Chicago Tribune syndicated columnist Robert Kohler saying about his movie, the investigative documentary reveals that by August 2024, self-proclaimed vigilante voter fraud hunters had challenged the rights of 317,886 voters, and the NAACP of Georgia estimates that by Election Day, the challenges exceeded 200,000 in Georgia alone. According to Pallast, Trump's return to power was not a triumph of democracy. It was a masterclass in disenfranchisement. He said, our film lays bare the ongoing war against voters of color, linking today's suppression tactics to America's darkest past. Georgia's Brian Kemp played ringleader, reviving Jim Crow-era tricks in a modern data-driven war against democracy. As Vigilantes Incorporated reveals, America's democracy isn't broken, it's rigged by design. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is sponsored by listeners like you and by Giant Palouse Earthworm, providing DIY music booking in Moscow and Pullman, focusing on extreme metal, punk, hardcore, and the avant-garde. Giant Palouse Earthworm is available on Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors for helping make this programming possible.
The Idaho House yesterday failed to pass a resolution to put repeal of the Blaine Amendment in the state constitution on the ballot this year. The Blaine Amendment essentially says the state cannot use taxpayer funds for religious indoctrination. Because House Joint Resolution 7 was a constitutional amendment, it needed a two-thirds vote from both houses to put it before the voters, who could approve it by a simple majority. The Blaine Amendment to the Idaho Constitution is a single, long sentence which says in full, neither the legislature nor any county, city, town, township, school district, or other public corporation shall ever make any appropriation or pay from any public fund or monies whatever anything in aid of any church or sectarian or religious society or for any sectarian or religious purpose or to help support or sustain any school, academy, seminary, college, university, or other literary or scientific institution controlled by any church, sectarian, or religious denomination whatsoever, nor shall any grant or donation of land, money, or other personal property ever be made by the state or any such public corporation to any church or for any sectarian or religious purpose, provided, however, that a health, facilities authority, as specifically authorized and empowered by law, may finance or refinance any private, not-for-profit health facilities owned or operated by any church or sectarian religious society through loans, leases, or other transactions. Although the more than 100-year-old Blaine Amendment protects people in the state from the breakdown of the separation of church and state, Republican Representative Elaine Price of Coeur d'Alene, who sponsored House Joint Resolution 7, said it amounted to religious discrimination.
This is discrimination based on religion. The Supreme Court has ruled in four different court cases, Trinity Lutheran versus Comer, Espinoza v. Montana, Carson v. Macon, and Loffman v. California, that withholding funds that are offered to non-religious and not offered to religious, saying that they can't give it to this religious organization just because they're religious, is a violation of the U.S. Constitution and the Free Exercise Clause. They have ruled this in these four court cases. Separation between church and state still exists in the U.S. Constitution and the Idaho Constitution under Article 1, Section 4. We are not repealing anything. We are putting a question in front of the voters, and they make the decision whether they want to repeal this or not. This is about state-sanctioned religious discrimination. The whole Blaine Amendment came about to discriminate against Catholics and against Mormons in the state of Idaho.
That was Republican Representative Elaine Price of Coeur d'Alene speaking on the House floor yesterday. Some in the House did not seem to buy that argument. There was no debate on House Joint Resolution 7 in the House, and the resolution needed a two-thirds supermajority to pass, or 47 out of the chamber's 70 representatives. The vote was 42 in favor and 28 against. Republican District 6 Representative Lori McCann of Lewiston voted no. Republican District 6 Representative Brandon Mitchell of Moscow voted in favor. Luke Mayville of the initiative group Reclaim Idaho said in an email to supporters yesterday, "Recent decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court have significantly weakened the Blaine Amendment and have opened the door to private school voucher programs like House Bill 93. Repeal of the Blaine Amendment would go a big step further by entirely eliminating the barrier between church and state." Nicholas Umfenauer admitted to two counts of first-degree murder in Second District Court in Lewiston yesterday. The 30-year-old helped a prisoner at the state penitentiary at Kuna escape March 20, 2024, when the prisoner, 33-year-old Skylar Mead, faked a medical emergency, so prison guards transported him to a hospital in Boise, where Umfenauer shot two guards and drove to North Central Idaho in a stolen car with Mead, where they abducted and murdered 83-year-old James Monty of Julietta and also killed 72-year-old Gerald D. Henderson at his cabin near Orofino. Judge Michelle Evans sentenced Umfenauer to life in prison without possibility of parole after he took an Alford plea, which allows him to plead guilty while maintaining his innocence. The Alford plea allowed Umfenauer to avoid the death penalty. Judge Evans said, "To me, it's unfathomable why you chose to kill those two people. There's no sentence I could ever do that would ever make up for what was done to their family members, their loved ones." Umfenauer is already serving a life sentence for aiding the escape of Idaho State Prison inmate Skylar Mead in March of 2024 and for being a persistent offender. Investigators say after a shootout in the ambulance bay at St. Alphonsus Hospital in Boise, where correction officers had taken Mead for treatment for a self-inflicted injury, the pair escaped in a stolen car and drove to just outside Julietta, where they abducted and killed Monty. Police arrested the two after they had returned to southern Idaho about a week later. In November, Nez Perce County Prosecutor Justin Coleman filed his intent to seek the death penalty for Umfenauer, citing aggravating factors such as utter disregard for human life, committing the murder while committing another crime, and being a continuing threat to society.
Union membership in Oregon has surged by 23% since 2013, placing it among the top 10 states for organized labor growth in the country. Service Employees International Union, Local 49, which represents over 15,000 healthcare, janitorial, and security workers in the region, reflects this trend. Union President Meg Neamey says they added 1,500 members last year, including workers at Providence St. Vincent, Legacy Mount Hood Medical Centers, and Intercon Security. She says she predicts that growth will continue.
We are seeing that more and more workers do want to come together and form unions to be able to have protections on the job and advocate for the wages that they need to be able to pay their rent, pay for groceries, and get to and from work.
Oregon is bucking the national trend, which has seen union membership fall by half since the 1980s. 16% of the state's workforce is now unionized, far exceeding the national average of 10%. That growth is driven by organizing in healthcare, education, and the public sector. Reflecting on past victories, Neamey notes some airport workers at PDX unionized with SEIU Local 49 in 2016. Before that, she says they worked for minimum wage with no benefits. Longtime organizer Stan described having to cowboy through shifts while sick. But thanks to the contract they won, his working life now looks very different.
He pointed to his new glasses that he had just gotten, and he told me he was headed to the dentist to get some dental work done that he'd been putting off for years, and then leaving to go pick up his grandkids.
Neamey says labor in Oregon and across the country continues to face serious threats. She points to anti-union efforts by the Trump administration and what she calls corporate greed on steroids. She also criticizes attacks on immigrant workers, who she says are being unfairly blamed for the hardships facing working families.
The real crisis is that people are struggling to be able to pay their bills, even though they are working full time. And we are going to continue to stand up against this kind of scapegoating and divide and conquer tactics.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
In 2024, just over 37% of Wyoming workers between 25 and 64 years old had a college degree or professional certificate and earned more than their peers with a high school diploma. That's nearly 6 percentage points lower than the national average, according to Lumina Foundation's new A Stronger Nation report. Courtney Brown with the foundation says the report is not just about numbers or charts. It's an opportunity for policymakers and educators to create pathways for people to get the education and skills they need to succeed.
When more people can access and succeed in earning credentials of value, communities benefit, the economy grows, and more people are on a path to a good job and a good life.
Wyoming ranks 46th among the 50 U.S. states, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico for workers earning at least 15% above a high school graduate's median paycheck. More Wyomingites with a bachelor's degree are meeting this benchmark than those with associate's degrees. In 2024, just over 53% of Wyoming's workforce had some post-secondary education, up from 18% in 2009. Many people are skeptical about taking on debt associated with a four-year college degree. Jeff Stroll with the Georgetown Center on Education and the Workforce says that investment really starts to pay off after age 35. Industry certificate programs can also boost lifetime earnings, but Stroll says they need to provide the right skill sets for people to land jobs that pay a living wage.
So you got to be really laser beam aligned with the job in the field that somebody's going to work on. We don't have the strongest counseling system in the world. We need to invest more in it to help these students align with jobs that they make use of their skills.
Currently, just over 43% of U.S. workers have college degrees or credentials, and Lumina wants to see that increase to 75% by 2040. Higher levels of education are often linked to greater economic prosperity, but Brown says there are also many other benefits.
I mean, research has shown again and again not only the economic impact on the individual, but also they're more likely to be healthy, they're more likely to vote, they're more likely to participate in their communities.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. This is Eric Galatis for the Wyoming News Service.
February is American Heart Month, and experts are reminding people that you don't need medical credentials to save someone's life. All you need is some basic knowledge and the courage and willingness to perform CPR. More than 70% of out-of-hospital cardiac arrests occur in homes, and the person's survival depends on immediate action. Tia Sherry of Portland learned this lesson last fall after her husband, Dave Gettler, collapsed with no warning while on a bike ride.
Whether you're CPR certified or not, you are the first responder until help arrives. You never think you're going to use it, especially with your loved one. And I'm so glad that I stayed on top of my certification because it kept Dave alive.
Sherry says after a quadruple bypass surgery and many months of cardio rehab, Dave is doing much better and is back on his bike. Research shows that CPR, when performed immediately, can triple a cardiac arrest victim's chance of survival. However, bystanders step in to help with CPR only about 40% of the time, and women and Black adults are less likely to receive CPR than others. Sherry encourages everyone to at least learn the basics so you can be confident when you need to.
For those that are concerned or worried or think that they don't know how to do CPR, what are the options? That somebody die with you because you didn't try?
People can learn hands-only CPR through an online video offered by the American Heart Association or visit heart.org/nation to find a local CPR class. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, mostly clear, low 30 tonight. Patchy fog after 8 p.m. Increasing clouds tomorrow, high 46, patchy fog before 10 a.m. Mostly cloudy, gradually becoming mostly clear Thursday night, low 30. Increasing clouds Friday, high 44. Over the weekend, Friday night, 50% chance of rain, mainly after 10 p.m., snow level 3,700 feet, cloudy, low 35, and on Saturday, 60% chance of rain, snow level 3,300 feet, rising to 4,000 feet in the afternoon, otherwise cloudy, high 42. Currently 36 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, have a good night. This is Lee Robartis. David Katz assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a good evening.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.